It is a real privilege and honor to be standing in front of you this evening. It is not something that I take lightly. I wouldn't be here if not for many of you who are in front of me now. And so I can tell you it's a little nerve-wracking preaching in front of all your teachers, but I know there's others that have done it before, so there must be a way. The Lord has given me a message on my heart to share with you tonight. And I had a lot of illustrations for this message, and I was wondering which one I should open with. And then I decided I needed to have an illustration that would be sure to speak to each and every one here. So I decided to open up with an illustration of food. Is there anyone here that doesn't like food or doesn't eat at all? Okay, I think we all do. And so imagine that you are driving, and it's about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You haven't eaten anything. You're really trying to find a restaurant. So you're driving by, and then you see it. It's there. And it says, steakhouse. I'm like, all right, that's where I want to eat lunch. So I park, and you go inside, and everything's perfect. The decor, they seat you right away. The waitress is friendly. And then she opens up her mouth, and she tells you this. We've got everything on the menu except steak. How would you feel? Personally, I would be devastated because if I pulled into a steakhouse, it's because I love steak. And the title of my message this evening is Where's the Steak? Where's the Steak? And I'm using that as an analogy. And what I want to talk about is how the church is a house of God. The church is the house of God. In fact, in the Moray language, their word for church is wendogo, which literally means God's house. They have no other word for church. And the Bible tells us that God is love. And so the church must be a house of love, must be a place of love. And out of all the things that are necessary to organize a church, the one ingredient that is absolutely necessary in every single church, if it is truly a house of God, is love. And of course, love is a gigantic subject. There are so many things that we could say about it. The one who's going to be speaking after me, Pastor Dan Kirim, he wrote a commentary on Corinthians, which he entitled, A More Excellent Way, from the passage in 1 Corinthians 13. In that more excellent way that Paul wanted to show the Corinthians was the way of love. And so I'd like to begin in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And I'd like to read from verses 1 through 8. And I want to read according to the ESV. Because I love using the King James Version. But especially with verses that we have read hundreds of times, I like to also get another version. I like to get another perspective. And sometimes it helps us just to make it a little more real for us. And so I'm going to read, If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. And as for knowledge, it will pass away. And so our first point that I want to consider, we're going to look at some of these verses in more detail, but I want us first to just establish this very clearly, that God is love. God is love. And if we are Christians and we bear the name of Christ, who is God, then we need to be those who are full of love and are known for love. Jesus told us, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one toward another. 1 John 4:8-11, he that loves not does not know God, for God is love. In this was manifested the love of God toward us, because that God sent his only begotten Son into the world, that we might live through him. Herein is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us, and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. And there we know that we receive the love of God proven to us through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. But it says that if we have received the love of God, then we need to love not only God, but we need to love one another. And we are only like God to the degree that his love has been perfected in our lives. And as we're going to look at some of these descriptions in love, and as I was reading through it, I'm like, God, I've got a long way to go. I'm not nearly perfect in love yet, which means I am not nearly enough like God, because God is love. And I want to share another story. In the country that I visited, and this church was founded by a Korean missionary. And the Koreans are very different than the Africans. This was a certain country in Africa. And the Korean missionary would want to do things a certain way, and then the Africans just totally were not understanding what he wanted to do. This missionary who founded this church also had been in the army, and he was a commando. And so he tended to be very much on discipline, sacrifice and discipline. That was his message almost every week. Well, the Africans aren't real strong on discipline. They're just not real strong. Now, there's a lot of different ones. But anyway, the point that I want to make is he had a really hard time finding a local pastor for this church. And they have been through many pastors since we have visited that country. But recently, God gave them another pastor that we know. And we were actually instrumental in getting this pastor to become the pastor of this church. And I knew that he would have a difficult time because I knew that some of the problems that were there, but I also knew that he would be very good for the church and that there would be things that he would learn there that God would be able to teach him. But after a couple months, when his eyes were all wide open and he was seeing some of the conflicts of personalities that were there, this is the comment that he made to me. He said, "It's a great church." He said, "They are organized, they serve God, they love God, and they go out evangelizing, they found other churches, but all that they are missing is love." That's it, just love. And I thought to myself, well, okay, at least they do have the other things, and those other things are important. But I thought to myself, but if you don't have love, what do you have if you're a church? Because God is love. And even in their language, it's God's house. That's the word for church. And so if you don't have love, what do you have? Where's the steak? Amen? Now, the story doesn't end there, thankfully, because this pastor was very mature, and he had the love of God in his heart. And through many trials and difficulties, he was able to communicate the love that was in his heart to the people of the church as well. And that church today is flourishing. I think they had about 30 members when he took it over. And now they have over 150 in less than 2-3 years. And God is doing wonderful things because he brought love with him to the church and he was able to communicate that. And now they're much more effective in their evangelism and the church is growing. And when we were younger, we had a certain song on cassette tape. I think that cassette tape got stolen when I was about 7 years old, so this is going way back in my life. But I remember the chorus of that song, and it said, Love is the greatest gift of all. Love is the greatest gift of all. Without love in my heart, I can't be a shining light. 'Cause love is the greatest gift of all. I'm sure Daniel remembers that one and my other siblings as well. But that phrase kept coming back to me, without love in my heart, I can't be a shining light. And if we are really going to be the house of God, we must be those who major on love. In Colossians chapter 3 and verse 14, again in the ESV, it says this, "And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony." Recently, my wife and I celebrated our 10-year anniversary, just this month. And I remember over 10 years ago, we were in this very church. We had just gotten engaged, and Pastor Bailey was announcing our engagement to the church. And I remember very particularly what he said for counsel. He told us in front of the whole church, he said, "Pastor Tucker will give you many practical instructions on what to do and what not to do in the marriage. But," he said, "I'm going to give you just one word, love." He said, "Love each other, and the rest of it will take care of itself." And now there's a balance there, of course. Love is the foundation of marriage. And if we will love each other, if a husband and wife love each other, of course they'll still have their struggles, but the difference is they will be willing to go find the solutions to fix those problems. They will be willing to go to Pastor Tucker to get this counsel to get the problem fixed. But if we just have all the counsel and we don't have the love, it's not going to work, and they're not going to end up staying together. And so I so appreciated what Pastor Bailey said with respect to marriage, but I think it's truer to a large extent also in a church, that we can have many good things put together in a church, but if there isn't love, then we are really missing the mark. Matthew 22, verses 36 to 40, another well-known story. Someone comes to Jesus and says, "Master, which is the great commandment in the law?" And Jesus said unto him, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." And so Jesus equated, yes, loving God, but also loving your neighbor as yourself. And he said they are equal. That yes, the first one was to love God, but the second one is equal to it. It is every much one of the greatest commandment as the first one. And I excuse for my English. My English is terrible. I never practice it. That's my problem. 1 John 4:20 to 21, "If a man say, I love God, and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he that loves not his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loves God love his brother also." And this is very important, because we cannot hate our brother, we cannot criticize our brother, and at the same time say that we love God. Because loving God and loving others go together. And sometimes we can be so zealous in our love for God and our love for the standards of God, which is important, but we can develop a critical spirit. And this is very important, and I want to give a little illustration. As I mentioned, it was my wife and I's 10-year anniversary this month. So on our way here to America from Africa, we decided to spend 2 weeks in Europe. We were in four different countries, and when we got to Slovakia, and the capital of Slovakia is Bratislava, we had just come from Prague, and Bratislava is a very dark city. I was talking with Pastor Rob Jr., and he was there in the late 90s, and he was agreeing with me that it feels very much like Eastern Europe, and it is dark. And there are all kinds of terrible spirits there, and I could just feel the oppression. We could feel the oppression when we were there. We only got there on Saturday afternoon, but by Sunday morning, we were saying, "We need to go to a church. We've got to find God. We've got to find a break from this oppression." So we went online, and we were searching for a Pentecostal church in English in Bratislava. And so we found one, and we made our way there, and there were about 20 or 30 people in that service. This is the point I want to make. The worship songs that they were singing were not worship songs that I usually sing. They're not styles that I particularly love to worship to or find it easy to worship to. And I've been in a lot of good services in Africa, and I've been in a lot of challenging worship services in Africa, so I'm used to a lot of different music. But when they started to sing these songs, they were there to worship. They were there to worship. It didn't matter that these aren't the songs that I usually find it easy to worship with. They were worshiping. And because they loved God, and love and worship go together, is that right? And because they loved God and they were worshiping God with all their hearts, I was able to worship God too. Even though when I play those same songs just by myself, I find it hard to enter into the presence of God myself. But they had already brought the presence of God because they love God. And sometimes there is this danger, and I'm speaking from personal experience. I'm saying this is a danger for me. Being in Africa, and you can be in a worship service, and it's just terrible if we're honest about it. I'm trying to worship God, and I can't hear anything except the drum going at full blast. And I'm trying to focus on God, but I can't. But I've been in other services, and okay, it's not my style, but the people are worshiping, and that's all I care about. And I will worship, but I tell you, sometimes it is a challenge because we are also there as teachers, right? So we want to be there to also show them a more excellent way. But if we are not careful, and if I am not careful, do you know who I become? It's not David, it's Michael. Do you know the story I'm talking about, the end of 2 Samuel chapter 6? David is dancing with all his might as the ark is brought into the city. And afterwards he gets home and his wife says, "Why did you dance so foolishly? All the young women were looking at you. Why did you do that?" And she was criticizing David for the way that he was worshiping. Did it turn out well for Michael? Michael became barren, that passage tells us at the end of 2 Samuel chapter 6. That Michael did not have any children until the day of her death. And it deliberately links that to her criticism of David's worship service. Now, there are many things we study, and I teach on praise and worship. And I teach on having balanced praise and worship. And I teach on styles that lend themselves easier to opening our hearts to God and bringing the presence of God. But I must be very careful to always try, whatever service I am in, also to find the presence of God, even if it's not the style that I might think is correct. Because if I begin to criticize my brother who loves God, there is no question that I am in the wrong. We can have a debate as to what style of music is better. It's hard to come to a definitive answer to that. You won't find an exact black and white answer in the Bible, but the Bible is clear that if you are criticizing your brother and you say you love God at the same time, that you're wrong. That's clear. And so, personally, I don't want to be a Michael. I want to be a David. And I want wherever I go, if the people are able to love God, I want to love God with them. And yes, I also want to be able to share with them what God has put on my heart. But one time, a few months ago, my wife had a dream. And in this dream, the Lord said to her, "There is no room for prejudice in my house. There is no room for prejudice in my house." And as a missionary, sometimes we can be full of prejudice. But God says, "No, not in my house. My house is a house of love, a house of love." Continuing on, that was just point one, God is love, and we'll move quickly here. But coming back to 1 Corinthians 13, there are eight things that Paul says love is not, or love does not. But we're just going to say point two is love is not. And then point three, we will look at what love is, and there are another eight things. And we're not going to go into detail in all of these, but I just want to touch on a few. First of all, he says love is not envying. Love is not envying. Now, we can envy something that someone else possesses. We can envy a dress. We can envy a car. There's a lot of things that we can envy. But often, our biggest struggles are not with natural things, with tangible things. But sometimes, we can envy the relationship that someone has with another person. We can envy the relationship that someone has with a pastor or with an authority. And that envy is not love, and it will lead to more problems. And so instead of envying the relationship that someone else has, we need to love so that we are building our own relationships. And if we have our own relationships, we will not be envious of others. Next, it says boasting and arrogant. We'll put these two together. Love is not boasting. Love is not arrogant. Puffed up, conceited, superior, proud, self-important, condescending. And I read a story of a journalist, and he was interviewing locals in a certain country about different missionaries. And everywhere he went in this country, he kept hearing about this certain missionary. And he would say, "Why do you love this missionary so much?" And for most of the time, the locals would say, "We don't really know. We just love him. We're just attached to him." And finally, he was able to get the answer out of one of them. And they said, "We love this missionary because he lets us help him." The other missionaries all come, and they come with their teaching. Sometimes they come with their money, and they do everything for us. But when we just want to bless them in return, they say, "No, we're okay." And so this missionary that all the locals loved, one time his father died, and he didn't have money for an air ticket to come back to the U.S. And the locals raised the money for him to buy an air ticket and go to the funeral of his father. Sometimes we think love is all about giving, but love is also about learning to receive. Love is not arrogant. Love does not think that we are better than others, but love is there in a two-way relationship whereby we give, but we also receive. We give naturally, we receive naturally. We give spiritually, we also receive spiritually. And according to the locals of that country, that was the key to being a successful missionary. Next, it says that love is not rude. In the King James Version, it says it does not behave unseemly. But I like the word rude. It's very simple. But if I were to ask you what is rude, that's going to depend a lot on your culture. I was talking with Pastor Tucker the other day, and he has learned the French culture very well. He was explaining to me, and this is 100% true, I have experienced this, that when you are in France and you need directions, you do not just walk up to someone and say, "How do I get to the Eiffel Tower?" You first say, "Bonjour, comment ça va? S'il vous plaît, est-ce que vous pouvez m'aider avec ceci?" And you don't have to say the third one in French. But that was, "Hello, how are you? And now, can you help me?" And when you are in France, if you enter any shop, before you look at anything there is, you greet the person behind the register. And if you do not greet the person behind the register, I don't know what they'll do to you at the register, but it's rude. It's considered rude. When an African comes over, the very first thing you do is you give them water to drink. Because in West Africa, a lot of days it's 105 degrees. It's very hot. And if you do not offer them water, first thing, they will take it as an offense. So you first give them water to drink. Then you greet them. Then you ask them how their family is. Then you ask them about their day, their job, their activities, and 100 other things. And then you can ask them, "Now, why did you come to see me today?" If we love, we will find out how to treat other people in a way that is polite for them. And that's the key, for them. And we were talking this afternoon about some of the challenges of cross-culture. And if you visit another country, don't worry. You're not going to get everything right first time. And they don't expect you to. They know you're foreign. They know that you're not from there. And they don't expect you to understand all their customs. But if you will just learn one or two words in their language even, you will open up their hearts to you. They will see that you are making an effort. And coming back to this Korean church I was talking about, the Korean missionary does a very good job there. And he organizes pastors' conference for 300, 400 pastors from the village. And often I have the privilege of speaking at those conferences. But one of the challenges there is often he has speakers that come from Korea that don't speak the local language, that don't speak French, and they don't even speak English. So what happens is they teach in Korean, it gets translated into broken English, then from English into French, which about half of the pastors understand, and then the other half wait for the fourth translation into Mori or Jula or Gurmanchima, etc. And so by the time it goes through those four translations, it's a very long process. And there's very little truth that remains because you can't say that much in an hour when it's being translated four times. So then when I'm invited to speak at one of those same conferences, and I start not just by teaching in French, but I even greet the people in their native language. Now, I only know about 15 words in Moray, but I work on those words, and I try to make sure my accent is clear and understood. And so they don't expect me to speak their language perfectly. I have enough trouble with French, not even talking about English. But they see that I am communicating love. And my good pastor friend, the one who can open up to me, he said, when you do that, he says, they just open up right to you and they understand everything that you're saying. Because why? You took the time to learn their language, and for them, that communicates love. And so we must find out what other people appreciate. So my wife knows that I love steak and spaghetti. And so we have a lot of steak and spaghetti in my house. And she's very good at communicating love that way. And it's not really complicated. You find out what the other person wants and you do it. Sometimes love, we can think, oh, it's so complicated. It's not. You give yourself for the other person. You find out what they want and you do it. So in a sense, yes, things are more complicated than that. But when you boil it all down, it's like Pastor Bailey told us, love. You love each other, and it will work out. Getting to the end here, I see my time is running out. But it says, love does not insist on its own way. It does not insist on its own way. There are things that are very black and white in the scriptures. There are things that are morals. There are things that are right and wrong, and there is no disputing, and we must teach those, and we must not bend on those. But there are other issues that we must not just insist on our own way, because in the culture in America, that's how it is. I'll give you an example. A few weeks ago, we were in Europe, and we had just met someone, and we were having coffee at their house, and they had two kinds of candies before us. And so I wanted a candy, so I took the first candy, I bit into it, and it was coconut. And my wife will tell you, I don't like coconut. So, of course, that's not a big deal. You eat the coconut, and that's fine. But then I wanted to wash down the taste of the coconut, because I don't like coconut. And so I took the other candy that was there, which was a chocolate-covered cherry. And I said, oh, this should be good. I like chocolate-covered cherries. So I stuck it in my mouth, I bit into it, and my whole mouth started burning. And I realized at that moment, these chocolate-covered cherries have alcohol on the inside. That's how they often make them in Europe. And I had heard that once, but I'd forgotten about that. So I've got this alcohol in my mouth burning. There's a reason why the Indians called it fire water. It burns the mouth. And so I've got it there, and now I got to decide, what am I going to do? And you know what? The right choice is always love. And you know what love said? Love said, swallow. Swallow. And so now there's some, oh, I don't want to shake his hand. He's had alcohol now. Yeah, I'm guilty. So it would have been better to make a scene and say, oh, I can't eat alcohol and spit it out all over? I don't think so. Now, I don't drink any alcohol. And I don't recommend it. And I teach against it. And I teach the words of, was it St. Augustine, who said that abstinence is better than tolerance. Right. And it's a lot easier. And I teach that. But that doesn't mean that when I'm in such a situation that I need to say, oh, no, this is black and white, because the Bible isn't black and white on that. And so we need to understand what love speaks, and we need to be governed by the law of love. I'm just going to say one more here, for love is not, and then we'll close. It says, love is not irritable. Love is not easily provoked. We must ask God to not allow us to be easily provoked by situations or by people. We have a guard where we live, because we have to have guards, and he's a great guard. He really likes to serve, and he does everything so particularly and so neatly. But every time he finishes the smallest task you give him, he wants to knock on the door and tell you all about it. And when we're video editing or we're preparing a message, I don't like to be disturbed like that. And sometimes we could be very irritated with them, and it's like, what now? But you know, he is also very easily injured. And so the solution, because if you talk to him just the wrong way, he's going to get offended. And the thing is, he's doing it out of love. He's doing it out of service. He's doing it out of a good heart. And so the love teaches us, don't get irritated. It doesn't matter. So you get up and walk to the door. You needed a break from the computer screen anyway. We have to love. Where's the steak? Don't serve me any of those soya burgers. I hate soya beans. I like vegetables. I like broccoli, cauliflower, green beans. I love a ton of vegetables, but don't serve me a vegetable disguised as a steak. Amen. We need true love in our churches. And I know we have love in our churches, but we need more love in our churches. And we need to ask God, oh God, put your true love in my heart. I don't want a fake love. I don't want to serve anyone a soya bean steak. But I want your true love in my heart, so that I can truly serve those around me and I can be a blessing to them and I can help them on their journey just as they are a blessing to me. And so I'd just like to pray that the Lord would impart love into our hearts. If you want to stand up, if you want to kneel, if you want to lift your hands, you want to bow your head, you put yourself in the position you want to be, and I'm just going to pray that God will give us love, that God will impart to us his true love.